This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington. Neil Conan is away. There was a time, not so very long ago, when television in America was like the giant campfire around which much of the country gathered. I Love Lucy, All in the Family, Murphy Brown, Seinfeld. But now, with so much choice, the nation's TV focus has fragmented. Three major networks no longer dominate. There's cable, there's TiVo, there's On Demand, all of which adds up to a whole lot more choice. Now, viewers fall into distinct groups: mobster lovers, reality TV junkies, and Cylon sympathizers. There's so much to watch now, conversation about television can quickly devolve into war between Project Runway devotees and worshippers of The Wire. The New York Times TV critic wrote an article last month called "You Are What You Watch," and we wondered, with television so balkanized, what does what you watch say about who you are? Later in the hour, preserving the disappearing musical legacy of gospel. But first, are you what you watch? What does the cue in your DVR say about you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. First up is Matt Rausch. He's a senior critic at TV Guide, and he joins us from our bureau in New York. And Matt, welcome.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good to have you.
Thanks.
How do you characterize television viewing habits these days? How have they changed with all this choice that we referred to?
Well, I think what's happening is that there's something for everyone nowadays, niches all over the place, on cable in particular. We just came through a summer. I mean, think about it. Most of us grew up having summer being a wasteland. I know people say sometimes TV is a wasteland, but I mean, in summer it really was. There used to be nothing to watch. This summer, there was something to watch on just about every night, especially on cable television. Shows like AMC's Mad Men or FX's Damages with Glenn Close or The Closer with Kira Sedgwick on TNT, which is, by cable standards, a monster hit. And, so there was never really a break in terms of people who are devoted to television having something to watch. And however, these are not huge audiences such as you used to get with, as you said in your introduction, the Seinfeld-type phenom. Those are rare. There are still, you know, in the new year, we'll have a new season of American Idol. Right now, Dancing with the Stars seems to be some kind of a phenom of sorts, although, again, it's more of a specialized thing, and a lot of people don't like reality TV at all, so they're not watching. But the numbers for these shows are kind of impressive. But still, there really is no true universal water cooler show commanding the conversation about TV nowadays. Mm. I think we're all a bit split into what our favorite shows are. And the fact is, there's a lot of different kinds of great television on right now. So I'm very encouraged by that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. I want to sort of jump in and ask you about the quality issue. Has all this choice made for better TV, in your view?
Well, I think especially where some of these signature shows of cable networks are concerned, I would have never expected a network like AMC to come along with something like Mad Men, a show that set in 1960 about these advertising guys and the women who work for them and sometimes sleep with them. And it is just a very – it's a satirical look, basically, at a different time. But it says a lot about sexual relations, sexism in the workplace, and just I think also this whole idea of selling an image of the American dream, which I think is kind of brilliant. But the look of the show is wonderful, but it's on AMC, and I would have never expected that to be there. And last week, Thursday night exploded, as you know, the season just began, so you've got new episodes of Grey's Anatomy and The Office and Ugly Betty and Survivor and CSI, some of the hottest shows on television. But to my mind, the best show that was on TV was at 10 o'clock that night on little AMC, a new episode of Mad Men. I mean, I was more excited about that than wondering whether Sarah lived or died on CSI.
You said no universal water cooler show, but then you mentioned Grey's Anatomy. Doesn't that sort of count?
Well, it kind of does, except when they moved it to Thursday night, it's opposite CSI, which is the most watched procedural crime drama of the week. There is room for two mega hits to exist against each other, but it keeps either show from, I think, taking to that next level of universal appeal, because there are many people who are watching, I think there are many people who are watching both shows. They watch one in real time and they DVR or TiVo the other, but there is no one show. Although I would say, like, in the best and second season of Grey's Anatomy, lots and lots of people were talking about the hijinks happening in that hospital, and McDreamy became a catchphrase, no question about it. So in terms of, you know, the guilty pleasure that we get from watching our hospital soap operas, it became the new ER and maybe even took that to a new level.
Well, I have to confess, I'm not a heavy television watcher, but I think I got swept up in the whole sort of HBO 7 years of The Sopranos and sort of came to appreciate what this medium could do in ways that I hadn't before. And I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, to what extent did the sort of Sopranos phenomenon kind of bleed over into network television and really raise the bar?
Yeah, I think much the way that in the 80s, Hill Street Blues helped TV drama grow up, and in the 70s, All in the Family helped TV comedy grow and become more real. HBO raised the bar once again with many of its shows, Sopranos for sure, but The Wire also, which there's never been a more bleak and unsparing chronicle of urban decay, but also with compelling characters, as The Wire is. And The Wire is one of these shows that ends up on critics' top 10 lists. It doesn't get a huge audience tune in for HBO, I guess, and the Emmys, for some reason, tend to ignore it every single year. But The Sopranos, The Wire, certain other shows, Deadwood, that sort of Shakespearean, profane, Western drama that was on for several seasons, there was a sense that HBO for a while really did command that kind of quality buzz, that people who didn't watch a lot of TV but wanted to watch that one show that mattered, it would be HBO. But got to say, lately, Showtime, the other paid cable giant, has sort of stolen HBO's buzz. They just came on with new seasons of shows on Sunday called Dexter, which is this twisted series about a serial killer who's a hero, but it's quite witty and macabre, to be sure. And then it's paired with a show called Brotherhood, which is sort of a Sopranos light that is set in Providence, Rhode Island, about a politician brother and his gangster brother. And it's filmed in Providence, and it has a real sense to it, a lot less mythic than The Sopranos, but just about as good. So I think that Showtime is actually beginning to be like the new HBO. And then you have FX out there on cable as well, with shows like The Shield, Nip Tuck, and this summer Rescue Me, and the thriller, the legal thriller Damages with Glenn Close. These are edgy in the way that HBO is edgy. I mean, it's adult television that doesn't insult your intelligence at all. And I think that FX also has really made a name for itself.
800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Matt Rausch, who's a senior television critic for TV Guide. And we're posing the question, if you are what you eat, are you what you watch? And if so, what are you watching on television in this new fragmented TV landscape? Let's take a call. Let's go to Shane, who's calling from Lynchburg. Hi, Shane. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking the call.
You're welcome.
I think more appropriately with me, it's not so much am I what I watch, but I've found a medium that almost perfectly defines the personality I had already established on my own through my own
perfect
life,
that works
history. And with me, I think, and with a lot of younger people in between the 20 and 30 age group, is this new wave of adult cartoons that have come on. It started with The Simpsons and then Family Guy, but on adult Cartoon Network, they
adult
have
Swim.
A show called Adult Swim that has tons of hilarious shows that often poke fun at society and pop culture, and many times also poke fun at what else is popular on television. And that's just almost a perfect representation of my own identity.
Interesting. Shane, thanks for the call.
Yep.
Matt, what do you think about that, these adult cartoons? Is this a way for people of Shane's age to sort of jump in and enjoy the TV pool?
Yes, absolutely. As I said, you know, cable really is about finding niches and finding identity for themselves, and much as South Park did that in some regards with Comedy Central. Again, very subversive cartoons we're talking about here. And they take, you know, the satire of The Simpsons and The Family Guy to a more twisted level. But again, it really is satirizing the culture. And this is a destination for people who are looking to poke fun at the culture. And again, what I find interesting about these things is that when you find these shows on Adult Swim, it's almost like it's your discovery. These shows kind of belong to you. You know that the mainstream may not be watching them because they're watching, you know, the 14th CSI knockoff on CBS or something, but you figure if you found this niche in Adult Swim and it really speaks to you, that you have a very personal connection to these shows that are in that niche that, again, helps define your relationship to TV and it's to you.
Mm. Let's bring Jonathan Storm into our conversation. Jonathan writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's a TV critic. He frequently gives his take on television, and he's joining us from the studios of Audio Post Philadelphia. And Jonathan Storm, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you. Talk to us about how television has changed. There are less Seinfelds, less Sopranos, less shows that the whole nation is sort of gathered around. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's been going on for 50 years, basically. It started with Milton Berle that everybody watched, and then it started to become fragmented even at that point. I think that your show, and some people may be making a little more out of it than it really is. I still think that television is a fun medium that people use to relax. And I think that the great bulk of people who watch it are not quite as laser beamed into defining their personality and so forth as some people may think.
But don't you think with all this choice now that, whether or not people are sort of focused like a laser beam into defining their character, it does sort of almost inadvertently give them the opportunity to do that with so much choice out there?
Sure, there's a lot of choice, and I think that makes television more fun for people. I think what's happening right now is that, you know, a certain segment of people who used to say that all I ever do is watch PBS and the news.
I don't know any of those people.
have now been able to find other things that they can say, well, and then I also watch this other show that you might not have heard of because you're probably not as smart as I am. But, those people have made me sick for 40 years and certainly for the 20 years that I've been in this business. I think that there's still a lot of people watching TV for fun. That kid who called in, who watches the Adult Swim, he watches it because it appeals to his sensibility and it makes him laugh. Whether that defines who he is, as he said, it doesn't define who he is. He's already that person. It's fun for him to be able to find something like that. So in that way, I agree with the premise. People can find things that really, truly appeal to them. And it might even be silver coins on QVC. I mean, people, you know, a lot of people tune in to see if they can get a, 1909 SVDB penny for $100 less than they could have gotten it last week. Lots of people.
With so much choice out there, it's practically impossible that you not watch TV. If you are what you watch, what are you? A mobster? An android? LC from the Hills. We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK or send us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. By now, you've probably had a chance to see some of the new shows for the fall season and figure out what's worth watching. Our question today, what does what you watch say about who you are? In other words, are you what you watch? Let us know. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And here talking with us is Matt Rausch. He's a senior television critic for TV Guide and Jonathan Storm, the TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Jonathan Storm, I was talking with you just a moment before the break. I wanted to ask you about this Sopranos phenomenon. Was that sort of the last big event show where just it seemed like a huge portion of the country, at least the portion of the country that had HBO, sort of gathered around this sort of television campfire, if you will?
Well, it's an interesting question. Certainly, it was a huge event of people who are truly passionate. I have never had a response to virtually anything I've written that was broader or more passionate than the piece that I wrote about the finale of The Sopranos. So people were very much hooked into that. But every week last winter, there were many more people watching. I can't remember the name of the show, American Idol. So you have to be careful. There's a tendency to sort of knock up the elite factor on this thing. Sopranos is HBO. It's maybe the best show in the history of television. There certainly was a great group of people watching it, but lots of people watch American Idol, more so, and it's not an elite thing. So I think you have to be careful about sort of characterizing this thing.
So there's still guilty pleasures out there, Matt Rausch.
Those people who are watching American Idol are not guilty. They're not stupid. They're not lumping. They are regular.
You know
Americans.
What I'm saying.
They're
you know
good
what I'm
people.
Saying.
Well, I think what's great about this conversation is, as Jonathan said, you know, there were people who used to say, I only watch PBS, and then it became, I only watch HBO. And it's not that way anymore. I think really there is so much more out there. And, you know, when FX came along and became like HBO with commercials, and then Showtime is also kicking in with some very high-profile shows. But even just regular network television, a show like Grey's Anatomy being great fun to watch, there really is no shame in any of this. And the idea of carrying guilt with what you watch on TV, it's a bit of misnomer, because a lot of these shows are great fun, and some of them actually have meat.
Hmm. Well, Matt, you mentioned Hill Street Blues. Now, what is that, 25 years ago?
Well,
that was excellent television. Yeah. Still holds up.
Mm. Well, how about and you've been mentioning Cylons and androids a little bit, you know, in tongue in cheek, I think. But I think that part of this conversation is also the mini phenomenon of Battlestar Galactica, which sounds like one of the worst shows on TV, but it's actually one of the best. That they reinvented a cheesy show from the 70s that was a terrible Star Wars knockoff that only appealed to kids, really. And then they turned it into this adult science fiction drama that has a lot of political resonance to it and military resonance. There were stories this last season that had echoes of the Iraq war conflict. Very troubling nature. It looks into the whole nature of humanity in a way that the best sci-fi does, but rarely on television. So you even take something like that sounds like a guilty pleasure, and it's so much more, and that's on the Sci-Fi Channel. So again, people find these things and they become discoveries. And what I really respond to in what's happening in TV nowadays, it isn't even really about guilty pleasure anymore. It's about taking true passionate pleasure in these shows that are so distinct.
Hmm. Well, let's take some calls, because we've got a lot of listeners backed up here. Virginia is calling from Deming, New Mexico. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I would like to say that I watch the History Channel, the International History Channel, the Science Channel, PBS, and I don't watch the other channels because they have such bad language on, but I like to watch the others because of intellectual things that they have on there. It's very, very positive for me.
And have you detected over the last few years more choice in the kind of programming you like to watch?
Yes, on the History Channel, all that. I try to watch the other channels, and I can't because of the context.
Mm, okay.
Do you watch Infamous Murders on the International History Channel?
No, I do not.
Well, it's there.
All right, Virginia, I appreciate the call.
Well, let me also mention one of the big shows of this last year. We're right now in the middle of the war, Ken Burns' War, which is somewhat upstaging the network premieres because it's a terrific piece of television. But earlier this year, the Discovery Channel, which is another one of those niches that people went to because the networks turned them off with everything being so smarmy and innuendo-laden, that they found Discovery Channel. And this year, they did this mammoth production of Planet Earth, which is one of the breakout shows of the entire year. And
shows I've ever seen.
Absolutely. So in that regards, again, my whole context of here about there's something for everyone on television, certainly those history channels, but the Discovery channels, and, you know, even like Animal Planet, which is an offshoot of Discovery Channel, and we had to say goodbye to the lead Meerkat and Meerkat Manor on Friday. I didn't care about Sarah living and dying on CSI. Flower, the Meerkat, died on Meerkat Manor. Everybody's like mourning in our office.
All right, let's go to Doug, who's calling from Sag Harbor, Michigan. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. You're on the air.
All right. You were talking about Discovery Channel. I love Discovery Channel.
What do you love about it?
Shows like Dirty Jobs, which certainly doesn't insult your intelligence. Some of the other ones like, I can't think of it.
Deadliest Catch, maybe?
Deadliest Catch, Mythbusters. You know, these are some great shows that don't just program for the lowest common denominator, and I like that. I like the smarter shows, and even some of the shows that aren't so smart, but they're enjoyable to watch. It's not the reality TV that's just mindless TV.
So, Doug, in any way, does what you watch on Discovery, I mean, does it answer this question, are you what you watch? I mean, does it say something about who you are?
I think so. I think it says I want something a little bit more, something to kind of educate myself beyond what The Simpsons can offer me.
Hmm.
Yeah, Dirty Jobs is a perfect example of that because it's both informative and a lot of fun because the guy is in messes every week, but yet he's also getting into something that you otherwise would not explore. And that's, of course, what the whole mission of the Discovery Channel is.
It's what a reality show can be.
Yeah.
It is a reality show, but it's what a reality show can be if it doesn't get all wrapped up in voting people off and silly competitions.
It's not contrived,
it's a spectacular show.
Sure. Yeah. Let's take a call from Todd, who's calling from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Todd.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
All right. I watch the History Channel and Discovery Channel, no shows on those, the shows on those stations. But I'm a black guy, and besides watching the block on UPN with Everybody Hates Chris and Girlfriends and such, I really don't get any other television that, you know, talks to me, as you're saying.
Interesting. What do you say, guys, Matt and Jonathan? Is there a shortage of programming that talks to folks like Todd?
Well, actually, CBS is trying to do a show that speaks to a Latin audience with their Dallas-style soap opera called Kane, which is about a Latin American, Cuban-American family in Florida. But what I'm encouraged by are shows that are more ensemble dramas that have had blended casts that don't make a lot about the race of any of their characters, shows like Grey's Anatomy or Lost, which has a wonderfully blended cast. It's a fantasy show, a mystery show set on an island, but you have Japanese characters speaking in subtitles in their backstories. You've got a wonderfully racially blended cast on some of these shows. Ugly Betty, which is sort of the overtop soap opera, again with a strong Latino presence in it. So they are making efforts, but certainly they've got a long way to go, and I'm sure that there are many people who feel disenfranchised by what's on TV.
Right. Now, see, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, those shows that I do watch that come in the 2-3 hour block are great shows, but I'd like to see them, like, blended in with, you know, across those other shows that you just spoke of.
Exactly.
All right, Todd. Well, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
There are a lot of shows that have supporting African American characters, not so many that have lead characters. The new one this year, K-ville on Fox, which is set in New Orleans, has an African American lead. I'm not particularly fond of that show, but at least making a shot with that one with Anthony Anderson.
Yeah, for me, the breakthrough will be when CSI does another spinoff and the lead investigator will be either a woman or a minority of some sort or other, because they do seem to be the same kind of sullen white man, and it becomes very cookie cutter. Or even Grey's Anatomy, for that matter, which has a wonderfully blended cast. But what if Meredith Grey had been African American? I think that would have been a real breakthrough, and the show would have still been a lot of fun. We certainly accept Sandra Oh as Christina and Bailey, and up to a point, Isaiah Washington, who's now going to be on Bionic Woman this season. But still, the idea that you can have a blended cast is terrific, but to have a lead player to be a minority, I think that's going to be when the real breakthrough happens.
If you want to join our conversation...
Please, Matt, please, no more CSI spinoffs.
Let me just give a phone number here. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK is the number to call to join our conversation with Matt Rausch and Jonathan Storm about what's on television and taking on the question, are you what you watch? Let's go to Michael, who's calling from somewhere in Michigan. Hi, Michael.
How you guys doing?
Very well, thanks.
I have to say I'm quite the TV junkie, but I have to find myself more watching quality shows. I'm 37, and I find that I relate more with Fox shows and the Showtime. I love The Dexter, Rescue Me. The new Damages is great. And I found myself going away from the typical ABC, CBS, those channels, because it seemed to be a repeat of the same old shows. And it just seems these new FX and the Showtime and the HBO shows are more towards my age group. People that I talk with, they like those shows, anywhere from my age up to 50. And it just seems more realistic to us. And then I had a quick question, too. Is there going to be, with the change of the head of HBO, are their shows going to change from what they used to be, or are they going to try to maybe pick up the pace again and be the same that they were?
Well, they have to pick up the pace again. They need to find that signature show, the show they have right now called Tell Me You Love Me, which is really pushing the sexual envelope, but is also, I think, a pretty interesting show when you get past the sex, if anybody can. It's not going to be that show for them. So HBO is still, I think, struggling right now. They lost their franchise shows with Sopranos and with Sex and the City, and they should have kept Deadwood around for one more year. That surfing show this summer was for the birds.
Deadwood was my favorite. I absolutely miss it. I feel lost because there was no ending, and there's so many people. You read blogs, and it just seems such a shame.
Michael, what HBO did was really extraordinary, though. It certainly had something to do with the people who were working there and Chris Albrecht, but it was also it's also can just be sort of like luck. They were lucky to be able to find these TV shows. A lot of people seem to think that these TV shows are sort of like produce at the supermarket, and you just have to go and pick the one you like. You have to have people who are going to create them. And the whole thing with Deadwood, the man who made Deadwood didn't want to make it anymore, and there's not much you can do about that.
Well, that was sort of what happened with The Sopranos, isn't it? I think they could have gone on and on and on with that if they just wanted to keep on making it.
Yeah, and they were right to let it go, though. I mean, every show has a shelf life of some sort, but the fact is that HBO is struggling, and well, with all of television, even in pay cable, which is a more rarefied world, and they produce less series than the networks have to do, you're still talking about it being a crapshoot. But with the pay cable channels and FX to some extent, there's a lot more creative freedom here. FX doesn't really worry about the FCC restrictions that the networks have to do, so they can push a lot of envelopes. I mean, good grief, what they've done on Nip Tuck over the years is enough to make me blush. And so in that regards, that plus the pay cable stations. I mean, their whole thing is about having edgy language, edgy content, and it is very much for adults. And FX labels all of its shows for adults only. They don't air before 10 o'clock on the Eastern Coast. And the networks just can't play that game.
We're asking what you watch, and if you watch, are you what you watch? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. The number is 989-TALK. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Charlie, who's calling from Oklahoma. Charlie, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I am there. I would say the answer to that question for me is yes. And you just already alluded to the fact that a TV show, Tell Me You Love Me, I happen to catch it in the middle of an episode. And that TV show, to me, is probably the most accurate reflection of how couples interact with themselves in real life. Not like this 90210 type stuff where it's just this crazy drama just for the sake of drama. But it was like a real interaction, and I could actually see elements of my relationship projected onto the TV with such accuracy that we didn't really even have to discuss certain things. We just watched the TV and kind of get...
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Did you like that, or did it make you nervous?
It didn't make me nervous, because what I think it was, it kind of, since it's so accurate, it makes you feel like you're just not less than normal. You see people who are more like you, you know? And that's what I liked about the show.
It validates your experience.
Yeah, it does validate your experience. And what I've gotten from just listening to just the people calling in, whether they like the History Channel or the Discovery Channel, they like things that validate them as a human being, things that have more elements of humanity to them, or things that are more accurate and things that are more true.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Charlie, yeah. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Panama City, Florida. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to touch bases on what he spoke about a minute ago about the Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. I find this to be a very well-written, a very well-acted-out show that, yes, that does touch on a lot of current themes in our society here today, but it's entertaining all at the same time.
Hmm.
And that's what I look for in programming.
Well,
you know,
good for you.
You know, Tim, I appreciate this call, and maybe, Matt, you can take this on. For our listeners who don't know what Battlestar Galactica is, can you just sort of give a quick synopsis?
Well, yeah. I mean, the premise is the same as it was in the 70s. It's about the ragtag remnants of the human race that were wiped out by a robot race, and they're trying to find Earth, which they left, you know, eons and eons behind. But it's about basically just the stragglers of humanity. But in this case, they're really exploring their own humanity because the robots that are chasing them, the Cylons, are almost an evolved form at this point. So it's a very, very, at times it's almost even profound. But to say that makes it sound not entertaining. And this brings up another show, which is a critic's darling and a ratings underdog. And it comes back this week on Friday night called Friday Night Lights. Hmm. It's set in a small Texas town around their football team, but it's not about football. It's about these people. And when I talk about the show, it almost makes it sound like I'm saying that it's good for you, when really it's just good TV. The acting is extraordinary. The stories are emotional. It's just a wonderful show, but it's one of those shows that it's hard to praise without it making it sound like it's dry.
Let's try to get one more caller in here. Let's go to Lisa, who's calling from Boulder, Colorado. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi. All of this is really interesting because even recently I've been contemplating that when I had my children, I had to start censoring the things that I watched on television. And you change a lot of things when you have kids,
right.
But I, you know, the identity crisis that you go through of not going out with your friends to the bars anymore, now I have to censor everything that I watch on television, and I watch TV with my kids. And the things that I used to really enjoy on television, I'm finding, you know, at first I mourned losing my ability to watch those TV shows. And now that I don't watch them anymore and I'm watching TV with my kids, I'm almost offended by some of the things I used to watch that I considered entertaining. So it's almost like my identity changed by the nature of what I have to watch with my kids.
So can you give me one example? What did you go from watching to what you're watching now?
From watching any of the reality TV shows.
Sure.
Or, you know, I hate to use a CSI, but any of those shows that have any violent premise to the plot or language in
sure.
adult situations.
Yep.
Now we watch anything that doesn't have any of those things that's rated for younger kids, so it's all educational. Or like on Discovery Kids, they've got Flight 29 Down.
Sure.
So I watch things that are geared to the 5 to 8 year old
Lisa,
demographic.
Thanks. Sure, I understand. Yeah. Lisa, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Matt Rausch, we've got 10 seconds left, and I need to say goodbye to you guys.
Very difficult to watch TV, primetime TV anymore with children.
Nope.
It's gotten
Disney
to
Channel,
be pretty
yeah.
darn raunchy.
Yeah,
I want to
it.
Thank you gentlemen both for joining us. That's Matt Rausch. He's a senior TV critic for TV Guide. He joined us from our New York bureau. And Jonathan Storm, the TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He joined us from the studios of Audio Post Philadelphia. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Anthony. Bye.
Bye-bye. Up next, 75 years after Precious Lord, there's a new effort to save the legacy of black gospel music. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.